All right, let's do this. How are you? What the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. It's one of the originals. That's what I'm told. I just watched a documentary about myself last night. I'm in Austin, Texas. Hopefully I'll be home. I guess it will be today when you hear about this. I've been on the road for a week, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but every day is at least 2 to 3 days in road years when you're out here, and I'm ready to get home. I get a little isolated, a little strangely lonely out here, but here's what's going on. Let me tell you what's going on today. A couple of things. My special taping has been announced. I'll be doing 2 shows at the BAM Harvey Theater in Brooklyn on Saturday, May 10th, 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. There's a pre-sale going on today from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Pre-sale code is all in, all caps, one word. Tickets are on sale to the general public tomorrow, Friday, March 14th. So, first off, let's go into who's on the show today, because this is an interesting episode of WTF, because I talked to a guy. He's not the kind of guy I usually talk to. I mean, as a person he is, but he's not in entertainment. He's not in music. He's not a writer, but he is a guy. What would you call him? A craftsman of clothing, of accessories. He makes things he wants to make out of brass and out of fabric and out of leather. His name is Mike Elias, and he is the proprietor and creator and designer for a place called Ship John that is up in Portland, Oregon. I've mentioned it before because I wear his stuff all the time, and it's not because I have to. It just fits me, and it suits me. But he's got an interesting story. This is sort of Dean Delray, turned me on to Ship John years ago. Dean's kind of a fashion plate. Dean is a guy who's always of a certain type. I mean, it's not for everybody, but there's a world that Dean exists in that has to do with boots, watches, jackets, and eyeglass frames, I would say, are the primary things. Guitars as well, he knows about. He knows about a lot of things, T-shirts. But one time we were up in Portland, and he was opening for me, and he knew this guy that had a little workshop and a very small little workshop store, and he designed jackets. I was kind of into the jacket idea. It was a jacket that Dean had. He did some shirts, but I was already on board with Filson from many years ago, from probably 20, 25 years ago. And this guy was in the same zone as that. I wouldn't call it work clothes. Some of it is sort of work-oriented. But he made this jacket called the Wills Jacket, and it's a very specific and unique design, and it's fucking awesome. And oddly, Mike, Ship John himself, designed that jacket 10 years ago. It's the 10th anniversary of the Wills Jacket tomorrow. And a lot of you are like, "What? Who cares? What is that? What does that mean? It's some guy who makes a jacket?" Well, you know, to all of us, no matter what we do, when there are sort of markers of our life, of our career, of our art, or whatever it is, it's a big deal. And this jacket is sort of a big deal. And I'll validate that. I will say it's a big deal to me. I wear the thing all the time, and it's a unique thing. But ultimately, it leads to a bigger conversation. He also gave me an oiled tin cloth shirt that I wore on Colbert. That was way too hot. It was really not that kind of shirt. But since then, I'm wearing Ship John stuff most of the time, whether it's the shirt or the jacket, occasionally a hat. He just sent me the Ship John version of a utility knife, of a Stanley knife, which he has an obsession with, which we'll talk to. But the story is interesting because he didn't set out to do this. You know, he comes from an oyster fisherman family in New Jersey, and the story is great. And he's a real, he had to learn this craft, not unlike anybody who has to do something creative or that they're possessed to do. And the arc of the story is pretty fucking interesting. And I deal with him all the time. We exchange records. We
you know, we hang out when I'm in Portland or he's down here. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that he's involved with. Like, I've always been a little, I've always felt like a little bit of a fraud when I wear, you know, boots and jackets that are sort of meant for, you know, hard work, which is sort of why he created the jackets. But there is a look to it, and it's just something I've landed on. I'm not going to feel too guilty about it any more than I feel about my personality in general in terms of being a fraud. I mean, it's a tricky thing. And after just seeing that documentary, I've got some answers about me, and they're not the easiest to sort of take. I'm sure I'm not the only one who has a lot on their plate right now. If you're also trying to manage the many things you've got going, one way to simplify everything is to put the experts at Simply Safe in charge of your home security. We've been using Simply Safe for almost a decade, and not only do they give us peace of mind, they always provide the best, most up-to-date methods for protecting your home. For example, Simply Safe's Active Guard outdoor protection can help prevent break-ins before they happen. They use state-of-the-art AI-powered cameras with live professional monitoring agents watching your property to detect suspicious activity. They can also activate spotlights, contact the police, even talk directly to people on your property. Hey, buddy! Get away from the door. I see ya. All before anyone has the chance to get inside your home. Plans start at just $1 a day with no long-term contracts or cancellation fees. Right now, head to simplysafe.com/WTF to get the best value in home security. WTF listeners can get 50% off their new Simply Safe system with professional monitoring and their first month free at simplysafe.com/WTF. That's simplysafe.com/WTF for 50% off. There's no safe like Simply Safe. So, identity. Self, who you think you are, who you really are. Look, clothes have a lot to do with that. Haircuts have a lot to do with that. But that's sort of the same with personality, too. This is sort of a, it was kind of a heavy few days out here in Austin. Steve Fine Arts premiered the documentary about my life and focusing a lot on the loss of Lynn Shelton to everybody that loved her, including me. And sort of, you know, who I am. And I have ideas about who I am. And sometimes those don't really match up with reality. I would say that's probably true most of the time. And I kind of talked about how my first viewing of the doc was a humbling experience. But to see it again was even more humbling and sad. And entertaining. I mean, I could see it was funny and how it would be funny and touching to people. But to me, kind of re-engaging with the grief, but and re-engaging with, you know, what I was going through and re-engaging with building a comedy set from that was heavy. But I got to be honest with you, the stuff that had the most impact on me, and I imagine some people, certainly the newer generations, have experience with this, but we didn't. I mean, I'm 61 years old, and there was a period in time when I started doing comedy in the 80s where there were VHSs of me that were existing. They existed. I had them. I had not looked at them in many years, and there was stuff I shot at my house with the family's home video camera. And that, to me, was really, oddly, the most disturbing stuff to watch in a kind of, you know, cringy way. You know, the emotional stuff that I'd gone through in the past 4 years or 5 years was not, you know, I could re-engage with that. But all the early stuff of me trying to figure out who I was on stage and really trying to figure out who I was as a person is a little tough to watch, because the truth is, and I speak to specific people who are either self-aware of this or suspect it. If you didn't grow up in an emotionally grounded household that was relatively healthy, where you were, you know, enabled to kind of complete yourself, you know, it's a rough go. And, you know, you try on a lot of personality pieces. You try on a lot of jackets and shirts and boots. You try a lot of haircuts. You try a lot of glasses frames. You try a lot of music. You read books about, like, how to be who you are. It's a very specific type. I don't think it's unusual, and I don't think it's unusual in my audience. but it's a real thing. So to see myself at different stages in age, but also at different stages in trying to find a voice as a comic, it was a little much, and it really kind of fucked with me while I was watching the show, because then I'm watching this whole thing and I'm like, you know, am I still doing that? Have I landed in me? I mean, I would hope so. And the truth is, I have. And it's not great. It's not, you know, I know your experience of me is what it is, and I give you as much as of myself as I can, which is not nothing. It's an awful lot. Seeing how I am from an outside perspective was really, it was kind of daunting, because many of you know, over the years of listening to me, you know, my need to, or propensity or compulsion to compare myself to other comics, to think that, you know, why am I not more popular in a broader way? And the thing is, I never really set out to do that. And I always was kind of against it. So what was interesting about watching this thing is I'm exactly really what I set out to be, but there's always this other part of you that judges your, it's not even a grass is greener kind of thing. It's more like that guy seems to have his shit together on all levels, and look at him presenting himself and being broadly popular and making a fortune and being good at what he does. Why am I not that guy? So that's not really a grass is greener in the sort of traditional sense. It's just sort of like, why can't I be a whole person that seems to be in control of their being? Why am I always falling horizontally? Why is my brain on fire all the time? Why am I always catastrophizing and thinking the worst of myself? Why? I have answered to these questions, some of them, that I've talked about on this show. I have frameworks that I've used over time, psychological and, you know, recovery stuff, but it's still kind of, it kind of eats at me, you know, like, you know, what I think I'm for everybody on some level, but the truth is I'm not. So what was kind of revelatory about watching this documentary about me is that, you know, I'm turning into this, I wouldn't say eccentric character, but a character nonetheless. And I've always noticed, particularly with presidents, you know, who start out young and then get old, that there is a turning point somewhere between 55 and 65 where they become the phase before the end form. Not old, but like, oh, this is the beginning of old. I can see it in their disposition, their hair, the wrinkles on their face. And you notice this with actors and everything else. But it's sort of hard to notice for yourself. But like, I'm like, you know, on the outside of middle age here, and I'm watching this movie, and some things haven't changed, but some things aren't going to change. And at a certain point, some things, you know, you're going to have to just accept about who you are. It is a whole package. And it's been sort of like that way for a while. So I think the big lesson for me was like, all right, well, whatever I thought I was going to be, and whatever on occasion I still think I could be or still think I should be, is not relevant to the fact that I am who I am, for better or for worse. And that I think that getting to that point sooner than later with yourself is probably a good thing, to kind of like give yourself a break a little bit. The fact is, I'm doing exactly what I've always wanted to do, and I'm doing it exactly the way I want to do it. And so, and there is really no other way, yet that voice persists. So removing that guy from the equation means that, you know, there's some radical self-acceptance that has to happen. And I guess it happened. I think it happened because of this doc. And it's such a weird emotional documentary portrait of me that when it was over, you kind of get that feeling like, well, it's sad this guy died. You know, when I had to go up on stage, you know, with Steven after the movie, I got up and I'm like, this guy's still alive? There was a moment where I'm like, I'm still alive. This is not one of those docs where you're like, God, I wish I'm glad I've been introduced to his work, but it's sad that he's gone. No, I'm here and I'm walking up to the stage right now. So it was an exciting weekend, and I was wearing a Ship John shirt. when I got up on the stage, because it seems that the Ship John shirts, you know, seem to fit the me who I am currently and presently. And it seems to be pretty much all of me. And the guy who designed that shirt is on the show today. So it is, as I said before, tomorrow, March 14th, is the 10th anniversary of the Ship John Wills jacket. And Ship John is releasing a special decade edition of the jacket tomorrow. You can check it out at shipjohn.us. It might not be easy to get one, and you might have to wait for it. But let's get into the life of Mike now. This is me talking to Mike Elias in the garage. This is an outlier type of talk for me. Yeah. But the truth is that I wear all your clothes.
You got a bunch of them.
But I wear, like, yeah. They're like, in terms of on stage,
yeah.
I've been wearing this tour. I wear that shirt yeah. that you got on, but doesn't look like that. So you did that on purpose?
Well, I've just been wearing this nonstop for the last 2.5 years.
And you wash it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wash my shit when it's stinky.
Yeah. And then it just fades out like that.
Yeah.
Now, what is that fabric called?
Sashiko Ori. It's kind of the, if you look at Japanese kendo geese, it's yeah. the fabric they made for that.
Okay, so now an idea like that. Now, that's a fairly traditional Western cut shirt.
Yeah.
And you get hip to this fabric
yeah.
because of you got people in Japan.
I got some people in Japan, and I fell in love with a shirt in Japan that was made out of this.
Yeah.
Bought it.
Yeah.
It was a small company over there,
yeah.
bought the shirt, and then got back here, and you could only find a really thin version of this.
That's here made in America.
The fabric is not made in America.
Right. But it's the idea of the fabric is supposed to be that fabric. But the fabric that you found here was not made in Japan either.
It was made in Thailand,
right.
I think.
Okay.
Some knockoff of this
right.
and,
yeah.
and really accessible. And it, you know, that if you, a lot of the shirts you see made like this are made yeah. out of that kind of cheaper version.
Right. But this one's heavy, man.
It's heavy. And once I set my sights on kind of what I want to make something out of, I just need to do that. I can't cut the corners and get the shitty version.
So for this vision of this particular shirt,
yeah.
you've got to track down a manufacturer in Japan.
Yeah.
And you found a guy.
Yeah, found a guy. They still make it the traditional way.
What do you mean? Like they grind the stuff to make the dye? And then they, like, I've watched like Instagram reels of things that are either Chinese or Japanese where yeah. they start with like rocks.
I mean, this starts with a plant. It's indigo.
Yeah.
But however, I don't know the exact process.
They spin the yarn. Yeah, it's like crazy to watch it.
It is insane. And, you know, this is a machine made.
Right.
It's not somebody hand making this fabric
okay,
on a
okay.
loom.
But, yeah.
But that, it is, it's a special version of it in that it's the thick actual.
Yeah, it's heavy, man. Like when I pack that shirt, it takes up, you know, a lot of room.
Yeah. You gotta make way for it in the suitcase.
Like I bring that shirt on the road now. And I also perform in the moleskin, that green moleskin
That's
Western
that you made
with the brass buttons.
That's
Those
cozy.
Are the two performing shirts for this
it.
Tour.
I'm glad they're with you, buddy.
Yeah, they're the Ship John specials. And then I got the Wills jacket, and I guess you just got my booking agent one, Joe. He got one, Joe Schwartz.
No shit.
Yeah, he just ordered it regular.
Oh, cool.
I didn't hook you up, but I guess he got it shortened a little bit, and he said, yeah, it seemed really long. I'm like, that's because Mike cuts everything to fit him. Everything's going to be a little long.
I mean, the whole basis of the brand is just shit that I want.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Everything I've ever designed is something that I see
yeah.
missing in the world or existed, but they don't make it the same way anymore. So I'll just,
yeah.
you know, like the shirt is the... It's not a complete copy, but the old U.S. made Wrangler shirts.
Okay,
they were cut trim. They were denim. They were good denim.
Right.
And at a certain point, they started making them elsewhere and made them out of shitty denim.
And then it just turns to garbage. Yeah.
So, I was like, those are now missing in the world
because yeah.
they stopped making good ones. So that's when I started making my version.
Well, this I think this shirt's a pre-sellout Filson.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah,
the history of that company is
the tragedy of that company.
It's, yeah, I'll stop short.
I mean,
but the history, there's so much good history in Filson. It's an inspiration for a small little brand like me, like what they've done over the years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, so where does it start though? I mean, because I know you're just a Jersey guy.
Yep. Yep.
But like not North Jersey. I come from North Jersey.
I always say I don't come from Joysy. I come from Jersey.
Yeah.
You know,
where?
So, Divide and Crick, it's called. It's a little small town in the closest town people seem to know is Vineland.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't, man. I mean, I know, here's what I know. I know Bergen County and I know the Jersey Shore and I know Jersey City. So I know, you know, Patterson, Wayne, Pompton Lakes, Haskell, Butler, up where my grandparents were.
Yeah.
And I know Jersey City. And then I know like Monmouth County.
Gotcha. Yeah, see, I'm 2.5 hours.
Which way?
South.
Of Monmouth?
Yeah. Well, where is Monmouth? Is that central?
It's a beach. It's like, it's on the water. It's by Asbury.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, yeah, at least 1.5 hours, 2 from there. You know where Cape May is, all the way down to the bottom?
No, but like, what's the...
The bottom of Jersey, that little dingle that hangs.
Yeah, sure.
So that's Cape May.
Yeah.
I'm on the Delaware Bay side, 1/2 hour north of there.
Okay.
On the bay.
So that's barely Jersey.
No, that's actually Jersey.
So we're going to have an argument about what's real Jersey. It's not where Bruce Springsteen comes from, man.
No, it's not. It's not.
But what is it, right up against Delaware then?
The Delaware Bay. So if you cross the bay from where I'm at, you'll hit Delaware.
Yeah.
You know.
So you're on the water then?
On the water. My dad's an oysterman, commercial fisherman.
Oyster guy.
Yeah, oyster guy.
Yes. So you grew up with oysters?
Yeah, my first job was on an oyster boat.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that where Ship John comes from?
Yeah, Ship John is a lighthouse right in the middle of the Delaware Bay called Ship John Shoal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of a point of reference when we're fishing as a young kid or working. We're south of Ship John today, north of Ship John,
uh-huh.
You know, that kind of thing.
So wait, this was before oyster farms?
They're farmed.
Yeah, they are.
You know, but they
even back then?
They do it differently out there where they'll dump the shells on the ground and then dredge the oysters. Whereas on the West Coast, like on the Willapa Bay, the tide will go down and they actually string the shells up and pick the oysters.
Oh, okay.
In some instances.
So the hipsters figure out a way to pick oysters.
The hipsters do?
I don't know. I just know that when you go to up the coast, up outside in, you know, Northern California and stuff, and up into Washington, then you get all these different kinds of oysters. It just seems like someone got the idea to breed these things and then put them on strings so you could pick them off.
Yeah, you just go out there and pick them like tomatoes.
But that's not the old school way.
Old school, they would tong them. They'd have these long tongs where they'd, you know, I think 12, 15-foot tongs.
Yeah.
They just reach down there and
just pull as many as they could. So this is more efficient.
Yeah, the dredges are more efficient.
Because Jersey, like, are they the big oysters?
Yeah, medium, not giant. But
Because, like, there's some, like, and then you got all the clamming, no clamming in the family?
There's a little bit of, not in our family history. Maybe my dad's grandpa or something like that would clam.
But. Yeah, none of those big quahogs or steamers. What are the steamers, those little ones, little necks?
They're good.
Yeah. That's what I remember about the Jersey Shore is go getting those bucket of steamers.
Melted butter on those things. So good.
Just pull the thing off the tongue.
Do you still eat shellfish?
I haven't eaten shit. I haven't eaten any of the meats of sea or land.
What do you get at Cantor's?
For 2 years. They actually make it now. Well, yeah, I mean, it's only been a couple of years, but they make a vegan Reuben there that's fucking awesome.
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some company's doing a vegan corned beef facsimile.
Gotcha.
Which is just with the spices. And then you can get, you know, the sauerkraut, vegan Russian dressing, avocado instead of cheese. They grill it. It's fucking fine.
I bet it's good.
I don't know. I don't miss the meat. What am I going to tell you?
You don't have to.
So how'd you avoid becoming a fisherman?
I moved to Philadelphia.
But what was the incentive? You got brothers and sisters?
Yeah, they're all still kind of around that zone. They're not fishermen. The brothers work at, they're laborers. They work on the highways. They fix the roads up and down New Jersey.
Oh, yeah?
Bridges and shit like
that. And your dad's still around or no?
Yeah, he's still around. He's still working on the boats.
He's still on the boat?
Yeah, he won't quit.
So oysters and what else?
Crabs. He used to go out and scallop boats every once in a while. That was scallops. Like maybe 2 weeks out in the ocean.
So he's like a bottom feeder guy.
Yeah, he's... he gets what we want from the bottom of the bay.
Yeah. So you get those Delaware crabs?
Yeah, the Blue Point. Or not Blue, sorry, Blue Crab.
Yeah, Blue Crab.
Yeah.
What are those other ones that the bigger ones? Dungeness.
Dungeness, that's West Coast.
That's up by near you are, by Washington,
they're
right?
They're so damn good.
They are good.
Yeah. You but get like one of them.
And then what are those ones down in Florida? Like Joe's crabs, those bigger, there's another type of crab down there where it's kind of like a Dungeness.
I never eat crabs in Florida.
Yeah, well, you got to go to Joe's Crab Shack or whatever.
I'll make
it's
a trip.
It's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal, those crabs.
I feel like I've heard of it, but yeah. I never realized what kind of crabs they do have down there.
Yeah, so you're basically in a family of fishermen.
Yep.
And everyone's kind of hanging out. And what makes you want to get the fuck out of there?
I just didn't quite... I love the way I grew up.
Yeah.
We grew up, you know, rabbit hunting, deer hunting, fishing, all the kind of...
All the hunting?
It's the woods
where I came
from.
Bow hunting or gun hunting?
A little both.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you can handle a bow?
I can handle a bow. It's been a long time.
Yeah. And what do you guys do? Shoot like one deer a year?
Nowadays, they're... I don't want to give out any secrets on how many deer. They fill the freezer up.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all the meat they're eating.
For the year or for 6 months.
Yeah, for the year, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, same with, rabbits too?
We'd eat rabbits sometimes. We'd give them to, like, some of the poor families around. We kind of did it for sport. They never went to waste.
You grew up shooting those guns?
Yeah.
Yeah. 22s, shotguns, big ones?
Shotguns, some rifles.
Yeah.
Handguns for fun.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Gun
shot in the hand one time with a .22.
What'd that do to you?
I think there's a little shard of it still in there. But it wasn't, my buddy sprayed the shell sitting there with the hairspray torch.
Yeah.
He sprayed a shell that was sitting there and it shot me in the hand like a dum-dum.
Oh, that's some fun kid stuff.
Fun kid shit.
What do you think was going to happen?
I don't know if he did think.
So you really grew up in that sort of rugged... outdoor working class world.
Yeah, just middle of the fucking woods and riding dirt bikes. Fishing,
from when you
hunting.
Were a kid.
Yeah.
Because there's something about Ship John, like there, and it's always been the way with me in certain clothing, in that I know I'm not living the life that the clothing honors. So I've got to temper my purchases to acknowledge the fashion and not come off as a poser of any kind.
I don't really buy into any of that shit. I just think if somebody wants to wear something, wear it. The thing about it is like I didn't come from the fashion world.
No, I know.
At all.
I know,
so it's just like these are the clothes that I think are nice and will last a long time. Whoever wants to wear them, you know, now the like workwear fashion is kind of a big thing.
It's been one for a little while.
And then we have people who buy our shit and actually beat the hell out of it, you know. So,
for real, for the work.
For real, yeah.
Well, I think Filson's the same way.
Yeah.
But like I just remember I used to do a joke a million years ago when, you know, shirts, you know, work shirts were getting popular back the first time when I was in college. These guys would get these shirts with like someone's name on it. And I had a joke about like, yeah, that must have belonged to somebody who had a job.
So well, you got a job, kind of. Didn't you know?
Well, you know, I'm just careful. Like, I had an experience where, and I've told the story before, but not too many times. Where, you know, I was in Boston, and one of the DJs who used to show up at comedy shows to kind of promote him, he always had these amazing leather jackets, and Vance and Leathers.
Oh yeah,
was in Quincy. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, I asked him, I said, where do you get it? And he's like, you got to go out to Quincy to Vance. And so I'm like, I'm going out there. I'm going to go to the source, you know. Yeah. And I remember, you know, trying on a jacket and a guy like fitting me, like who was there. He says, you know, well, if you're going to be traveling pretty high speeds, you're probably going to want something that fits a little snugger than this. I'm like, I'm looking for something a sweater will fit under. I'm going to be doing a lot of walking in this.
Did you feel like you were appropriating motorcycle culture with that thing on? Or
of course.
Yeah.
But like I there was one I wore a lot, but I always have a problem with sweat. I think Dino ended up with Delray ended up with both of those. I think I just gave them to him.
Yeah.
If he wanted to sort of move them or sell them. Because the one I really liked, like I sweat through. So now I got to, you know, really, I don't sweat as much as I used to. I'm maybe more relaxed. But
that's the meat.
Huh?
You got rid of the meat?
Maybe. I think I got rid of the stress too, some of it, in terms of the nerves that made me sweat. But like with leathers, they're porous. So like the and if you sweat through a leather, it'll get that, you know, that salt stain on it.
Salt stain,
and it fucks it up. And there's nothing you can't get rid of it.
It wants to stay there.
You're gonna fuck it up.
You can hide it. It'll show its face again.
Yeah. Sure. You can re-dye it, I guess. But it bummed me out.
Yeah.
But that's why when I got that, I think I got some fabric from you, like the most waterproof fabric you had. You just sent me a little piece of it. I don't remember because I wanted them to sew armpit things into that suede thing.
Oh, I remember that now. Yeah, that was that jacket in there.
Yeah,
the old one.
The Japanese one. No.
Oh, the Japanese one.
The Y2.
Yeah.
I had a guy at the tailor I know kind of fabricate some sweat things.
That was a sweat?
Yeah, to put it inside it.
Yeah.
Just so to have a little boundary so I don't fuck the suede up.
No shit. All right. I got you.
Yeah.
Makes sense now.
Yeah. That was that idea. So what do you do in Philadelphia?
Working odd jobs. I was a valet parker.
You just wanted to go to Philly because it was a big city?
Yeah, I was into skating and I like rollerblading actually, not skateboarding. I was into rollerblading.
Really? That doesn't seem like a man's game.
I thought it was. But no, I did that when I was a kid.
Doing pools on roller skates?
No, all that shit.
Oh, you can do them on
handrails and all that.
With the rollerblades?
Yeah.
Okay, but did you, how'd the guys on skateboards look at the rollerbladers?
They didn't like us, if I'm being honest. But I did get one of the guys who built FDR said I was the only FDR's a skate park in Philadelphia made by skateboarders.
Yeah.
And I knew how to skate concrete, so he noticed that and he was like, "You're the only rollerblader allowed."
Oh, really?
So I got a little badge from them.
Who was that skater that I met that knew you at Canner's?
Oh, that was Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't he a skate guy?
Rollerblading, yeah.
Oh, he's a rollerblade guy.
Yeah. You didn't know you were hanging out with a rollerblader, did you?
Well, I knew he did something.
Yeah. He's a sweet dude, man. He's the kind of guy who, like, takes care of the kids. You know, he, like, makes sure everybody feels good about, like, what even if they suck at what they're doing, he'll back them up and
he bought my dinner, dude.
That's sweet.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, he seemed like a good dude. He was a competitive rollerblader, that guy?
Yeah, at a certain point. Yeah. He's owned a skate shop for a long time.
Boards
helps the community out
and blades,
just blades. I think maybe skateboards out in Bakersfield.
But you never did the skateboard thing.
I'd skateboarded too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Competitively?
No.
Can you go up the side of a pool and then turn around, and come down?
Yeah, I could still do that. Probably. I probably shouldn't do that. Honestly.
Were you a punk rock guy?
A little bit. I delved into like East Coast hardcore for a little bit.
You had to, right? With the skates, but maybe not quite as hard.
I mean, it didn't really tie
that.
In. That all came from my brother. You know, he was real into the...
Older brother?
Older brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was, 9 years older than I am. So he fed me all the Fugazis.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Like the New York hardcore.
Sure.
H2O and Sing It All and all that shit.
How old are you?
I'm 43.
Oh, you're a fucking kid. It's crazy. How do you pronounce your last name?
Elias.
Elias.
Yeah.
Because I was going with I knew it could have been Elias or Elias.
A lot of people go Elias, but Elias.
Elias.
Yeah.
And that's a family name.
Yeah.
All right. So what occurs? Because like your journey as, you know, a clothing manufacturer is a little peculiar, isn't it?
It is not the way a lot of people go about it.
You're skating and you're working in restaurants in Philadelphia.
And then I was a bike messenger. And then I was parking cars, doing those jobs where you give cigarettes out at bars and shit like that.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, my wife and I...
You were with her back then?
We met in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah. We decided it was time to get the fuck out of Philadelphia. This is around 2004 or 2005, something like that. So we hopped in a Volkswagen van, believe it or not, bus 79, and headed west and just traveled the country. Had no sights on anywhere.
Where to live?
No, we just left.
Yeah. And so you did a crossroad trip?
Yeah, we were up across the country 3-4 times, up and down. I don't know, it was how many zigzags and...
But that was the idea. We're just going to live off the land for a year.
We wanted to move somewhere, but we didn't know where.
Okay,
you know,
sure.
We thought about the desert. We thought about West Texas.
Oh yeah, like Marfa.
Like more like there's this little town called Terlingua. It's a little hippie town near Big Bend and all that. Shit.
Okay, yeah,
it's real pretty down there.
Yeah,
but I'm glad I didn't stay there.
Stay in Texas.
Yeah,
but you hung out for a while.
hung out there for a little bit, hung out in California for a little bit, just zigging around.
What were you doing for money?
Playing guitar.
Really?
In the street, yeah.
And
racking up credit card debt.
How'd you do on the street with the guitar?
I mean, I never made a shit ton of money, but I'd make enough for a little gas or burgers.
So you've been playing a long time?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to play when I was a kid. My dad always played guitar.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call him out for this, but I was like, Dad, can you teach me how to play guitar? And he was like, I taught myself. You can teach your damn self.
So that was that's your guiding principle. Yeah. I got to teach myself.
Honestly, kind of.
Yeah. You know,
it stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I taught myself how to play guitar in late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
And just kind of like folk stuff.
Sure. You know? What did he play?
Your classic rock and roll.
Oh, yeah,
know, like Pusher Man and some Zeppelin stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
On acoustic?
On acoustic.
Oh, that's nice.
Acoustic. Yeah. So that was always happening in my house.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. But, all right, so you're playing guitar on the street. So you're living this kind of pseudo-hippie lifestyle.
A little bit. I mean,
pretty groovy?
I wasn't like a hippie per se.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Well, no, but, you know, just kind of free spirit.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do you get up to Portland?
We had to meet somebody there. We had a job at a skate camp, actually, for a summer. Because we ran out of money. This is in Tehachapi, California. And met some friends there. They invited us to work on their farm up in Humboldt.
Pop farm?
Trimming.
Yeah. So we did that. You're picking buds?
Picking buds, trimming buds.
This is before hydroponic, right? It was out in the wild.
This is in the woods, yeah.
Yeah. So an Eagle pop farm in the woods.
Yeah.
That must have been pretty, because I remember that was where all the good pot came from for a while. Before,
it
was, back in the day when I still used drugs, you know, I remember when like, you know, like since like when buds came, like they were rare. I mean, like all of a sudden you're getting these fucking Humboldt buds.
Yeah, before that it's just like whatever kind of shake in a little bag.
But it was in my lifetime that Sensimilla became the thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It used to be like they didn't sell that shit. It was crazy. I don't even know why. I don't know the history of weed.
I mean, it always came in buds. Maybe they just ground it down to stretch it.
Who the hell knows?
Like mix the leaves in anything like that.
So the shit with the shake with the good stuff. But but when those it was hydroponic too. That came out of Canada. But when the Humboldt weed came, you know, I was still smoking weed and it was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
That was like the place.
Yeah.
I knew guys who came from up in that area, played in a band called Dieselhead.
Remember that band?
Oh, you would like that band, actually.
I'll check it out.
Well, there's only like two records, but they were kind of this odd bunch of guys who were playing around San Francisco that did kind of a hillbilly punky kind of, not really hillbilly, but it's hard to describe them, but I kind of knew those guys and they were all kind of Humboldt kids.
Yeah.
So you're up in Humboldt picking buds.
Doing that. And then before we went there, we had to meet somebody in Portland. So we're in Portland for 1 day, 2 days maybe.
Yeah.
And then went down there, got done with that. And we're like, you want to go check Portland out a little bit more. It seemed nice.
What year is that?
There. That was 06.
Okay.
It was 06. Yeah.
So that's sort of peak Portland.
It was good.
So you get up there, you're like, this is it? Felt groovy?
We kind of just, you know, we were living in the van on four blocks from where my shop is now, just in a parking lot. And we didn't have any computers or anything. So we'd go to this little coffee shop and look at their like community computer, try to find jobs and places to live. And ended up I got a job at Stumptown.
The coffee place, the original Stumptown.
I went into the original one to apply. I didn't even know what a fucking latte was. I walked in.
Yeah.
I was wearing like the same vest as the guy, Blake, working, same plaid. And I was like, you guys hiring? He's like, yeah, actually we are.
Yeah.
And trained up and started making coffee. Worked there.
You're pulling espresso?
Pulling espresso.
Yeah. That's what you do in Portland.
That was kind of so at that time, Stumptown was the only good coffee. There were some other ones starting, but that was before they got really huge.
Oddly, Stumptown, for whatever reason, is still very good coffee.
Oh, it's great coffee.
And I can't ever figure out what it is, but I guess the magic is in the roast and the beans. But like if you drink Stumptown, you're like, oh, this is Stumptown.
Yeah.
It has a flavor.
It's
all of them.
They don't fuck it up. You know, like,
they
don't over roast it. They don't under roast it.
It's a magic.
Yeah.
You got to find the magic numbers. Everybody roasts coffee. Yeah. Intelligentsia is sort of the same way. They make a good coffee where you can actually tell this is Intelligentsia, no matter what bean it is.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so
Stumptown. Signature roast.
Right. Yeah. I don't even know. I don't get how that works. So you're at the only Stumptown.
No, at that point they had three of them. Mm. And only in Portland. It wasn't a nationwide or worldwide thing at that point. But it was cool because everybody rad in Portland. It was the best coffee in Portland at the time. So everybody came in. So that was my intro to Portland. I got to meet all these amazing folks, musicians, artists, all these people. Like, I became part of the community in Portland pretty quick.
As a guitar guy or just a guy?
As the guy who made people's coffee at that point. But made some friends, you know. And
It
was a good intro to the city.
Yeah.
Whereas I only worked there for a year, but if I never got that job, I don't know.
What would have happened?
Because when I started making shit, all my friends who I met through the coffee shop started buying the shit.
And
just kind of branched out from there.
But how does that happen? You're just a dude who's got no real vision. And when do you make your first shit? What compels you to do that?
It's always been the same thing. It's always been, like I mentioned earlier, with the shirt.
Yeah, but still, there's a big jump between this isn't around anymore. And
well, that's how it started too. You know, so at the time, I was real into cycling too. Bicycles.
Bicycles. Like, yeah.
Riding bicycles around. And you know those little cycling hats with the little brim?
Yeah.
You couldn't find those without a big fucking logo on the side.
Right.
And I've never been a big fucking logo guy.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make my own cycling hats without a logo. So
that was the first thing.
Started selling those. At the time, I was starting to make wallets and shit like that.
Just your hands?
The shitty sewing machine I had.
Yeah. So you didn't know how to sew, though? You figured it out?
Not really. I just started sewing shit.
So you took a bike hat and you took it apart.
Basically, yeah. Took it apart, altered the pattern a little bit, made it fit my big old head.
Yeah.
And started sewing them up. You know, I fucked a bunch of stuff up.
But that's all, that's like your dad. You know, you got to teach yourself.
Yeah.
So you had a shitty sewing machine. You're taking apart pieces of clothing so you can figure out patterns.
Yep.
And you made bike hats.
Made bike hats. That turned into...
That became popular, your bike hats?
Well, I met one of the best bicycle builders in Portland.
Yeah.
Sasha White, still one of my best friends.
Yeah.
He's building these phenomenal handmade bikes.
Yeah.
And I went into his shop and he asked me about my hat.
Yeah.
And he liked it. I made one out of wool.
Yeah.
And then he was like, can you do a run for Vanilla Bicycles? And
yeah.
I was like, shit, yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. You know, this guy's like my craftsperson hero.
Yeah.
And that turned into me making bicycles with him. So I started to learn metalwork.
So you do the hats.
Do the hats.
And you're making one hat at a time.
Yeah. I think I did 25 hats for him or something.
That was the run.
That was a huge run for me.
That took you a month.
Yeah. Worked my ass off on this thing.
Did they sell pretty good?
Yeah, they sold out. Yeah.
So now you're in the shop and you're starting to learn how to put together bikes?
Yeah, he was starting a little bit of a production run of bikes and he just needed hands.
Right.
He's like, you ever run a lathe? And I'm like, no, but I'll fucking figure it out. Same thing with the latte. Figure out how to make a latte. I can figure out how to run a lathe, right?
Yeah.
So I just go in there and start learning how to fabricate metal.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, hand making bicycle frames in a little shop in Portland.
And then you're welding?
He's doing all the brazing at that point. I ended up doing some of it, but... So I'm prepping all the parts. So tubes have to fit together with a miter or some people call it a cope.
Yeah.
Where the tube kind of wraps around the other tube.
Right.
So I'm prepping all those miters and cups and stuff like that.
But you're learning the ropes.
Learning the ropes.
With the machines.
And also a lot of handwork. And I think that's where I really, really realized what I could do with my hands.
Yeah. You know? Like what kind of handwork on the bikes?
A lot of hand filing.
Okay. So, yeah, sure.
Some tubes are welded. Some are what's called fillet brazing, which is like a brass ramp between the two tubes.
Yeah.
Which holds the steel together.
Yeah.
So to make those perfect, you have to kind of do a lot of hand fire.
Yeah. So you're getting skills.
Getting skills and learning how to use my hands. And once you kind of realize the hand-eye coordination and the brain construction coordination, you can apply that in a lot of different ways.
Sure.
So, I think that's when my dexterity and my kind of my brain kind of opened up to how I can use my hands.
And you learned a craft too, though.
Learned a craft, yeah. And I still use that. I still make little metal bits. And,
yeah, I know. I have some. Yeah. I have some metal bits.
Yeah.
every time you get a wild idea, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I need that thing that holds the record down. Some weird mic brass bit of business. Well,
that's where my mind's going these days. Because I, you know, my mind is always, I love the clothing that we make, but yeah. I don't, it's hard for me to get excited about another piece of clothing.
Oh yeah.
Personally.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited about what we like putting this stuff out there,
yeah.
but my mind wants to make other rad shit, you know?
Well, okay. So, but like in the world of what you do, so you quit the coffee shop to work at the bike place.
Yeah.
And then what happens? So you got this metal skill set, you've made hats.
Yeah.
So then what's the next jump?
The next jump, I started making bags for bicycles.
Messenger bags?
No, like a pannier bag that would go on the bike. Bicycle.
Out of
like
what, canvas?
Seat bag. Canvas.
And leather or no?
A little bit of leather.
Yeah.
Sometimes webbing.
Uh-huh.
So I'm starting to formulate these and the pattern making on those is more straightforward than a garment.
Yeah.
It's a rectangle here, rectangle there,
sure.
curve here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to formulate a little bit more of an idea of how to construct a pattern.
Yeah.
I'm learning about seam allowances more. I'm kind of, and this is all by fucking up.
And you know, stitching?
Stitching. My stitching's getting straighter.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah.
And just starting to figuring out tools too at the same time. Because you couldn't go on YouTube and figure out how to make something back then.
Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck, there's got to be a tool for this.
Yeah.
So I had the internet, so I had research, but like there wasn't this wide variety of people selling leather tools online at that point.
Oh, really?
So you had to go to really fucking search.
You had to go to Tandy?
Tandy's kind of bullshit tools, but I'm glad they're there because.
Are they still there?
They're still there, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? It used to be owned by Radio Shack.
No shit.
Yeah.
Really?
Tandy Corps owned Radio Shack. I know they were affiliated, but I always.
I didn't know that.
Anytime I went to a Tandy store for whatever, like, rarely in my life, but I just remember there always being a Tandy store. Right? Yeah. I grew up in New Mexico, and I'm like, who the fuck is shopping in here? Who's making these belts? But somebody was.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about a place like that, and this exists in all kinds of tool applications, you know. Yeah. If you're going to make you and your friends a couple of belts,
right.
It's perfect for that.
Yeah.
You know, you buy the tools that they're not going to last forever.
Right.
They'll do the job. They'll get the job done. But if you're going to manufacture it, that stuff's not going to hold up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just isn't. So.
So, all right. So you figure out where to get leather tools.
Yeah. Start learning about, in fact, C.S. Osborne is New Jersey.
One of the leather places?
One of the leather tool manufacturers.
Oh, yeah?
So I found out about them, and then I started, like...
Do you have a relationship with them now?
No, I don't, but they don't give a shit about me.
Yeah. But they still make the tools.
They still make the tools.
And what about the leathers? Are you going to, like, Horween, or what are you doing?
I use some Horween. I use mostly Herman Oak.
Yeah? Where's that?
They're in the Midwest somewhere. I forget where they're at.
But so now, like, alongside of the skill set and the tools and figuring this stuff out... You're also researching materials.
Research materials and make mistakes, just like cutting shit up and trying. Like I'd make the corner of a bag, just the corner of a bag, just to see how like those three pieces would fit together.
Yeah, and, figuring it out.
Yeah, just trying to make sense of it all.
What's the first the first run of stuff you did after the hats was the bags?
I started making some custom bags for custom vanilla bicycles.
Yeah.
And then I started making my own kind of duffel bags and backpacks and things like that.
Yeah.
And
you still do that?
Still do that. Yeah.
So where does, the influence to kind of broaden it out? You got that from Filson?
I mean, in a sense, there was definitely inspiration from them.
Well, I remember when I bought my Will's jacket early on. Because Dean brought me to before you even had a store, really.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He brought me to the first shop.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know who you were. And,
we just had like a little
store. Yeah. And, you know, Dean, I met you, and then, you know, he's talking up that Will's jacket. And, you know, Dean is the pipeline to all small artisans
He finds the folks. Yeah.
Yeah, he's interesting like that. But I imagine between him and I, we brought you a few customers.
I can't thank you enough.
But the problem is we're bringing you customers. People are like, I got to wait a year for that jacket. I'm like, yeah, but yeah, it'll be cool. Yeah. But I remember it's telling me on my wills, you said that that oil cloth, that tin cloth that that's made out of was Filson surplus. Or from the same place that Filson used to get it.
Used to get it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I won't mention any exact specifics on that.
Yeah.
But the Wills jacket was born of that fabric was prior to the Wills jacket only used for luggage bags.
Okay. For Filson or whatever.
Filson, other people made stuff. Yeah. I was making my bags out of it. That's how I knew about that fabric.
Okay. And is that called a tin cloth?
I mean, the tin cloth is kind of Filson's term for it. Yeah, it's waxed canvas.
Waxed canvas. Yeah, a heavy waxed canvas.
Generally speaking. This one, the Wills is waxed twill.
Yeah, it's nice.
So it's a 1x3 weave instead of a 1x1.
Yeah. So you're making bags.
Making bags. At that point, I got a job as a stonemason.
Wow.
I was done with the
bicycles. So now you know how to do that, too.
I'm building, hand chiseling rock walls, dry stack rock walls.
Yeah.
Like an old castle.
Yeah, yeah. Was that a detour, or were you still kind of chipping away at the clothes?
I left the bike thing. Yeah. I was doing my own thing this whole time, but it wasn't making enough money for it to be my full-time job.
Right.
So I had to work. I was working at bars, too. Yeah. I worked at like 3-4 different bars in Portland.
And, wow. Okay.
And, you know, doing music stuff at the same time, all this different shit.
Doing Portland stuff. Yeah.
Life stuff.
Yeah.
You know, trying to explore whatever the hell it was I was going to be doing.
Yeah. For the rest of it.
Yeah.
And you figure out a way to do all of them. So when do you...
I don't know if I figured it out yet, but...
But when do you start to make it your business? How does that, is that with the Wills?
After the jacket, yeah. That kind of changed the game.
So you're still working out of your house?
Yeah. At this point, I think right around this time, I got this little barn studio.
Yeah.
It was $100 a month. It was like a little, maybe 15x15 carriage house from turn of the century.
Okay.
But it was finished on the inside.
And you had your leather tools in there?
Leather tools.
Your sewing machine?
Little workbench, little sewing machine.
Uh-huh.
And all the tools. I like slowly collected tools. That's what I was doing at that point. If I sold like a wallet or a little thing, I'd just buy more tools. I never had... I was poor as shit.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have any money around.
And you hadn't had a kid yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
No.
And so, but you're also learning how to, you know, draw patterns.
Yep.
And doing all that.
Yeah.
So the moment of lightning in a bottle was this Wills jacket.
And that came from, I won't mention a name, but I saved up some money and bought this really nice work jacket to do the stonemasonry.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fucking thing, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was gone. Like the front seam fell apart.
Okay.
I had a hole because I'm carrying these big rocks around.
Sure.
So I had holes in the arms and shit like that. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I got that. I have a couple of yards of that really heavy shit.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make myself a jacket.
Yeah.
Out of that.
Right.
That won't rip.
Yeah.
that was the impetus behind making the Wills jacket. It was like, I just needed a better jacket.
So you made the jacket with the brass?
With the what?
With the brass buttons
and shit? It had brass snaps, yeah.
And you made the snaps?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. They were snaps I can get.
Okay, so you got the brass snaps, and then you made the jacket.
Yeah.
And so what, people start going like, where the fuck did you get that jacket?
It was bonkers. Every single person who saw me walking around one-on-one, I had like, you know, Instagram with like a couple, 300-400 followers, and every single one of them wanted one, and then all the people I worked with at the bar wanted one, and blah, 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 so I was just like, fuck it, you know, like.
Let's make some jackets.
Yeah, give me some money, I'll get after it.
So you started to do it?
Yeah.
How many did you make?
At that point, it was like 25 or something like that, and it took a long time, too.
And you had no one working for you?
No, it's just me.
Making Wills jackets.
Making Wills jackets.
Out of that one fabric.
Yep.
One color. So then they start spreading. It becomes viral all of a sudden.
I mean, I guess for back then. Micro-viral.
Yeah, but everyone in Portland won.
Everybody in Portland won. And then spread it a little bit to, you know, I had buddies in Seattle for music, so they, yeah, they wanted one, and
right,
you know, started to kind of creep out.
So that's all you were making at a certain point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still wallets and things like that, because at the same time I was
doing
refining
leather?
My leather craft. I'm still refining. I don't mean to
the
say
chain that. Wallets?
Chain wallets. Yeah. I have a bunch of different wallet designs and
yeah,
bag designs and things like that.
All right. So when do you start hiring people and broadening the merchandise?
Just ever so slowly decided that the shop had to grow and now
buy some more sewing machines.
A lot more sewing machines and started to hire staff. And
Are you still the primary designer?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I design everything.
You don't have anybody there that's sort of like, what about this idea? They don't even bother?
Jacob and I work together on like fabric choices and things like that because, you know, the thing I didn't realize when I started the business is,
yeah,
you have to do all this other shit,
yeah,
you know, like payroll and
right,
all the
oh, yeah,
accounting and all that shit.
Yeah.
So much of my time now is spent kind of tip-tapping on the computer.
Yeah.
So it's cool to have trusted folks to bounce those ideas off. Jacob, who
yeah,
you met a couple times,
yeah,
he's really cool in that he studied a lot of the history of garments. He's collected like vintage band T-shirts
yeah,
for the last fucking 25, 30 years.
So he's a garment historian and collector.
He kind of is, yeah, yeah. And he knows a lot about fabrics and the
yeah,
history of them. So he'll like do these little searches for neat fabrics that are available and kind of throw some stuff in front of me. And I'm like, nah, that one feels this way or feels that way. And,
yeah.
So I make the final calls.
But, right.
Or, you know.
It was funny because when I bought the Wills, I think I bought a waxed shirt that I wore on Colbert, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was too hot to wear on Colbert.
I bet.
Very sweaty.
Yeah, those things are not forgiving.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's for, you know, it's a layer for rain. I mean, like, but like, that's just my thing. It's like, this is a cool shirt. And there I am on Colbert, like, you know, sweating my balls off in a waxed shirt. It looked pretty good, though.
It looked good.
Yeah. But it's wrong place to wear it. But yeah, so, okay. So then you just start making all the other stuff. Making
yeah,
the Wills
and then
shirts.
It's kind of the same thing, like I mentioned earlier. I wanted the duffel bag, so started to design and make duffel bags and the shirts and the jeans and it's
but
all
that's
kind
later,
of,
right?
I yeah, mean, it starts to grow in the 2017,
I love the
17-18.
The story behind the stitching on the back pockets of the jeans.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To make like there has to be a signature to jeans.
Yeah.
And you did it with a record.
Yeah, yeah. It's 1, 2, 3. Four, it's 5 12-inch curves.
Yeah.
That I laid out.
Yeah. You know. And that's where you get that. And then what now for the denim nerds, because like I'm not a nerd. But you've got some machine that you hemmed my... Those things shrunk up a little on me. I might need to get some more
okay,
jeans.
We'll set you up.
Because like they're about just right, but I think they did pull up a little bit. I don't know how that happened.
Them?
Huh?
You dry them?
No.
No?
I don't know how it happened.
Huh.
But they're fine. They're good. Yeah. I wear them. But what is that machine that is so sought after for that bottom hem?
The Union Special, the 43-800G. It's made for hemming.
And that's like an old Levi's thing, or what is it?
Levi's used them. Pretty much all the big jeans companies.
But it's a manual thing. You got to sit there and do it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's got a motor. It's not.
Yeah,
like
no.
You're,
yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
Treadling or
right.
Hand cranking it.
But, right.
Yeah. I do it by eye. Some people like iron the hem out a little bit
yeah.
Beforehand, but
yeah.
I do it kind of, I call it the old hairy eyeball method.
Yeah.
You roll it and then there's a little folder that holds it in place. And
yeah.
The people love that machine because it twists the hem a little bit. So
yeah.
If you look at an old pair of Levi's
yeah.
pre-early 70s probably,
yeah.
The bottom of the hem has this little angle to it on the fades, and they call
oh,
it
yeah.
a roped hem.
Oh, and that's what you get with that machine.
That machine is
they don't
actually,
make that machine anymore.
It's flawed. No, they don't make it anymore.
So that's so you get like a little time travel element.
Yep, definitely.
So when did the attack happen?
Oh, the head attack.
Yeah,
that was 2018. Yeah.
So that's about where we are in the timeline.
Yeah, yeah, I was starting to pick it up with Will's jackets and things like that.
But it's still the old shop.
The
first shop.
The second shop, the second real shop.
But not the store shop.
Not the one that I have now.
Was it the one I went to?
That's the first one you went to.
Okay.
Yeah, MLK. In
yeah. Is that where it happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what happened?
That was, so we have music events
yeah.
in the shop.
Yeah.
This one was whatever celebration we're having. Some,
yeah.
A Portland band was playing. We had a great night. And Good Art Hollywood, the silver
yeah.
company.
Yeah, guy who just got me this nice bracelet.
Jewelry company.
Yeah, they, fucking, the Good Art stuff is so fucking cool.
They are magicians.
Yeah, now I'm like a bracelet guy. I've been that in my life at a different time back when I wore black cowboy boots.
Now you're a real bracelet.
Yeah, but now, yeah, now it seems back.
These are good ones.
Yeah, this one could probably be a little smaller, but it's okay. Yeah. The new one's beautiful. The one, the Ship John Good Art. Anyway, so yeah. So you had the event.
I had a little party, and my wife and I were closing the shop up for the night.
Yeah.
Just a sweet trunk show. The Good Art was there. They yeah. had some jewelry to show.
Yeah.
Just sweet people.
Yeah.
They're always good times.
Yeah.
You know, some drinks, some food, music. And then we close the shop up. Walk into the car, and two tweakers on little BMX bikes cruise by, and like one of them tried to rob me. One of them kind of sucker hit me in the head with an axe, with a hatchet.
With a fucking hatchet.
Yep. Yep.
And you went down.
I went down. Yeah.
And your wife is okay?
Thankfully she was okay. I was out.
Yeah.
I went straight down. She effectively, you know, saw me get
saved
killed.
Your life.
She thought that I was gone, you know.
Yeah.
Cops came. They scurried off. I came to in the operating room.
That's not supposed to happen.
Prepping me. They hadn't, put me under yet. They were kind of like pulling me in there.
Yeah.
And first thing I thought of, I didn't know exactly what happened, but
yeah.
I knew something happened.
Right.
I knew my wife was there.
Yeah.
And like, I just didn't know if anything happened to her. So I started trying to say, where's my wife?
But yeah.
My skull was cracked and pushed into the part of my brain that controls speech.
Oh my God.
So I could, everything up to the point of speech coming out
yeah.
worked, but it came out like,
oh
like
my God.
Words didn't work.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I started getting up off the fucking thing
because yeah.
I thought she was in the next room, you know,
yeah.
over getting operated on too,
right.
or not there.
Yeah.
And,
or maybe
one of the,
dead.
One of the nurses was like, he's not, we got to get her. Oh, they gave me a piece of paper and I was like, I just wrote my wife, you know.
yeah.
And one of them, thankfully, she went and got her. She came in and like held my hand. And then, you know, you've been put under. They do the thing like, oh, tell us about this.
And yeah, then, yeah. And then you're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, then I woke up the next morning.
But you were conscious the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, when I came to.
Okay.
And everything, like I said, everything worked, but I think it's like the Broca's area.
Yeah.
I'm not a fucking brain guy.
Yeah,
from
yeah.
what I've read and
yeah.
from what my doctors have told me, the part of my brain that, like my skull is pushed in.
Yeah.
Like holding that part
yeah,
down, so
right.
it just wasn't letting it work.
So what'd they do?
They had to cut that part of my skull out, and they just popped a metal plate on there.
And you yeah. can talk.
Yeah.
Could you talk like right after surgery?
It took a while.
Oh, it did.
And I still have, it's like a sort of an aphasia thing.
Okay.
Kind of.
But you got a metal plate in your head.
Got a metal plate, yeah.
And a second lease on life.
Second lease on life, for
how
sure.
How did that change your approach to life?
I don't know, man. I thought it was going to, I think I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah.
Still talk to therapists.
Yeah.
Kind of. Trying to understand how it affected me.
Yeah.
You know, because for a while, I'm kind of a, you fall down and you fucking get the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm a tough guy, you know.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I'm starting to realize that it had more of an effect on me than I thought it
the
did
trauma.
For the last, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So working through that with a therapist
yeah.
and trying to figure all that shit
anger?
Out. No.
No anger.
No.
Just sort of like the fact of being... attacked.
There was a point in time where, you know, I was going to get my CHL and I was like, I'm going to carry a fucking gun around with me all the time.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to be that guy. You know?
Yeah.
I don't want to, that to me is living in fear.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I'm scared of a lot of fucking things in the world, but not being attacked.
Yeah.
You know, even though it happened to me,
yeah.
it didn't put me in the state of like every tweaker I see is going to fucking kill me or anything like that.
Right. Did they find the tweakers that did it?
They did. Yeah. It was like a fucking CSI thing.
Oh, really?
my wife remembered that one of them threw a soda cup down.
Yeah.
They grabbed that for evidence.
Yeah.
Got DNA off of that.
Yeah.
Got a video of them buying the soda, and then so they had a facial tie-in.
Yeah.
And got him, man.
Yeah.
I think they caught the guy who didn't hit me first.
Yeah.
And he fucking ratted the other guy out.
Yeah.
And that was that.
And what happened? What was the justice?
One of them got 5 years, and one of them got 10 years. The guy who actually hit me.
Ten years.
10 years hard time.
Wow.
So they're put away. One of them's out now. That was 6 years ago.
No apologies?
Funny enough, the one who did actually attack me did a form of an apology in the courtroom.
Oh, really? So, you went to the trial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The arraignment for him. And the other guy was... No.
Yeah. That's interesting. So a form of an apology? Like he said he was high or what?
It was one of the written notes that somebody probably helped him out to write and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, they were tweaked out. They were
fine. And so you have a certain amount of forgiveness?
Yeah. I'd say a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Fucking hate him for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
I got other people I hate more than that.
But after that, so the business held up, and I guess you after you recovered, you just regrooved and got back into it, right?
Yeah, and I mean that's another thing with it. Like so many people, like there was a GoFundMe, and they did a big old like music benefit shit like that, and my community just kind of like gave me the biggest fucking hug through that, and my employees kept the shop rolling, and it was a good thing through it, you know. So we were able to kind of make it through all that shit.
That's great.
I had a pretty long recovery after that.
But, yeah. That's amazing, man.
Kept rolling, you know.
And you got it, you kind of just plugged on.
Still doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
When does, because like, you know, I remember I asked you years ago that, you know, you do a lot of, collaborations, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with Wesco Leather.
Wesco Boots.
Wesco Boots and then the leather Langlets.
Langlets.
Yeah. Yep. And you have relationships with people in Japan that love your shit. Mm-hmm. You seem to go over there a lot.
Yeah.
Is it primarily to buy fabric or sell stuff, or what's the global market of this stuff?
A lot of these collaborations, kind of the beautiful thing, the way I see it is they're actual friendships.
Yeah.
It's not just a business transaction.
Sure.
So like Chris Warren from Wesco's, he's one of my best friends in the world. Benny Langlitz, they're just Josh and Rach from Good Art. They're actual true friends of mine.
Right.
So it makes maybe the customers don't give a shit about this, but I think it's an important thing to bring these things, to birth these things from a place that's more than just like, we're trying to make money off of this shit.
Oh, of course. It didn't ever seem that way to me, but it's also interesting and not unlike food, where if you've got people that are craftsmen that love what they do and they're constantly, you know, doing new things or honoring a tradition, you know, the integrity and quality of the stuff is better.
Yeah.
It's the best you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember that one time I got a denim shirt from you, and for some whatever reason, when the stitching was coming off, and it was, I felt bad because you were like, "Oh my god, that should never happen!" Like it was like this glitch, and I felt like I'd insulted you forever. And you,
well, no, the thing is you can make. We're still dealing with cotton.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know,
yeah,
it's gonna. You know, even, you know, you work your ass off out there swinging the hammer and everything, you know, the stitch is good.
Exactly. It's all that hard work, right? No, I just noticed it, but we got on that right away.
Yeah.
But I guess I asked you early on because even the nature of the shop, like the new shop, it's like a functioning boutique. Like, I mean, you've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got stuff coming in. You've got products you like to sell that don't necessarily... Are your name's not on them?
Yeah, yeah. We carry other things,
but all kinds of stuff. You know, jackets, pants, gloves, hats. You did a T-shirt in the Mark Maroon color.
Yeah,
did that sell?
They're gone.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
And you did a beefy tea, you did a lighter tea, the black tea, and you got the West Coast stuff, you got some Langlet stuff, and then the Good Art stuff. Yeah. But then you got the axes. Now, the axe, like, you got you're into these axes. Like, I know you got some sweet. What's the axe company that you work with?
Grants First Brook.
Yeah, where's
Brook,
that from?
I can't do the accent, but they're from Sweden.
Yeah.
Now, and I've loved those I loved hatchets before I got hit in the head with one.
Isn't that fucking crazy, though?
It's like I willed it.
Yeah. You brought a hatchet right to your head.
Oh, man. So, I even, on the handle of my personal Grants First, I've had it for almost 2 decades.
Yeah.
Before it happened, I carved a skull onto the butt of my handle.
Yeah.
So I was kind of thinking, like, fuck, did I do some fucking weird...
Some magic, some dark magic, some prophetic magic.
But those axes I've always loved, and there's not a whole lot of places to get them, so I figured out how to carry them and started carrying those.
And they sell good?
They sell pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question I had early on, though, was, like, have you been offered to be bought out?
It's been discussed from a couple of angles.
Yeah.
But I'm a pretty bad businessman.
Yeah.
You know, like, I keep my prices at a point where it makes sense for the health of the business and no more, you know, and I'm not after it. I don't have that, like,
the money
startup mentality where I'm building this up to sell it.
Well, you like the work.
I do like the work, and I like the brand. Like, it's a part of me.
So. Yeah, and I guess the only drawback is that you can only do so many.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a Will's Jacket run, you know, people are going to order them a year in advance, and then they'll get made.
Yeah.
So I guess the only that becomes a question is, like, is there any way to make more of these and maintain the integrity of how I do it? And I guess the answer has been no.
We've upped it. You know, we've grown it.
Yeah.
Not exponentially, not a shit ton.
In terms of your ability for output?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the Will's Jacket specifically.
Sure.
And working with people to make, like, the collaboration stuff and offering other things.
Yeah.
So it's expanded, but I don't like... I feel like we've expanded on a level that's
manageable,
and the foundation is there before taking the next step.
Right.
You know, I don't like to, you know, if you start running across a bunch of stones real fast, you're gonna slip on one, fucking crush your ass.
And right.
So I like to have the strong foundation before taking another step.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's a healthy business move.
Sure. Hey, look, other man, people. If you're making enough for the life you want to live and you're, you know, providing what your employees need, I mean, like, that should be enough.
Yeah. I'm happy.
Yeah.
And we try to pay our employees well. I want to continue to improve that trajectory of making sure they're taken care of better and, you know, insurance and all that shit. We provide a well-being opportunity for these people. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah, know? Yeah. And that's
and
the way
my
it
family,
should be. Yeah, yeah. Know? Now, is your dad wearing any of the Shipshon stuff?
Yeah, he's got some shit. Yeah.
Out on the boat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got this hat. You should see this fucking one of the waxed hats.
Yeah.
It looks like it's been through fucking hell. All that salt air.
Yeah. So he's got a classic wax baseball cap style.
Yeah, one of ours.
And then you do the trucker hats, that trucker cut.
Yeah.
I have a few of those.
Yeah, the classic.
Yeah, it's a big difference, man. It's weird where that type of hat is gone.
Yeah, they started making them, like, shallower, and the bills got longer, and...
Well, the fastbacks, is that what they're called?
The snapbacks?
Snapbacks. Yeah. They're their own thing, and they're pretty good, if you like that style. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those dumb ones that fit real tight on your head, I don't know what those are.
It's the new style of that hat, and
I like the ones you make with the big top for the old style from when I was growing up.
Totally.
Yeah.
High crown.
So what's the big plan for the future? Just to keep on keeping on?
Yeah, man. Starting to, like, last year was better than the year before. This year's starting off better than last year. So starting to continue improving logistics within us, you know, smoothing out the way we operate.
And now you seem to have an obsession with making metal stuff.
Metal shit. I'm working on more. I just made this little key release thing.
And the wait for the records. I think I sold one of those. Someone I worked with on the movie
Gotcha.
Her husband's an audiophile, and she's like, I just don't know what to get him. I'm like, I do.
Oh, yeah. Even if you don't use it, it looks nice sitting
there. It's a cool thing. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if she got one.
Yep.
I have no way of knowing that. And before we go, what's the... Your obsession with Stanley knives, utility knives, is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You collect them.
Well, it's kind of back to the beginning. So yeah. When I started doing leather work,
yeah.
I didn't have any money.
Yeah.
But I had one of those knives, so I did all my leather cutting with one of those knives.
With the Stanley.
And so it's been that, like, treasured little tool that I learned how to... It's not a leather tool.
Right.
And specifically the ones where the blades don't retract.
Yeah.
So it's... It's kind of like this. I'm a nostalgic guy.
Yeah. You
know? So it's like this. Oh, that's my little tool that helped me learn how to do all this shit.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's and just that branched off into a full on obsession.
Yeah, I got a little. Yeah, I have a problem with them. I've got like Stanley. I don't know how many I have, but
how far back do they go? Like, you know, years. Like, what's your oldest Stanley utility knife?
40s, I want to say. Originally there were cast iron, and then there were cast aluminum.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth.
And now you made one.
Yeah,
there's a Shipjohn utility knife.
Yep. Yeah, they got machined in Japan. They're
based on the Stanley.
It's a totally new design.
Sure.
But the idea is based on the Stanley. It holds the same blades.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to get one of those.
It's a beautiful thing. I love it.
I got to get one. How quick do they fly off the shelves?
The brass ones went away real quick, and then we did some copper ones.
Yeah.
Then we did aluminum ones, and they weren't as hot.
Okay. You know,
it's special aluminum. But
people like brass.
They like the patina. And
yeah. All right, buddy. Well, it was great talking to you.
Nice talking to you too, Mark. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That's not a usual WTF story, but it is a human story, and it is the story of a guy who was possessed with the need to create and manufacture and design. Great guy, I'm glad to have talked to him. And again, the Decade Will's Jacket is available tomorrow. Go to shipjohn.us to order it. Hang out for a minute, folks. All right, guys, listen up. If you're dealing with hair loss, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. When you try Hims, you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who stopped hair loss and grew back their confidence. When you use Hims, you get clinically proven treatments that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months, and you don't even have to visit a doctor to get started. It's 100% online. You just answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/WTF. That's HIMS.com/WTF for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/WTF. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Keine zwei Trader sind gleich. Warum solltest du also eine starre Trading-Plattform wählen, die keine Flexibilität erlaubt? Kraken Pro ist für dich gemacht, nach deinen Vorstellungen. Drag, Drop, vergrößere und erweitere jeden Pixel. Lege mit vorgefertigten Layouts los und verschiebe Module und Widgets, wie es dir passt. Besuche pro.kraken.com. Trading Crypto ohne Kompromisse. Powered by DLT Finance, einer Marke von DLT Securities GmbH und DLT Custody GmbH. Beide Unternehmen agieren mit Zulassung der BaFin.
Hey, people, we posted the 20th Ask Mark Anything bonus episode for Full Marin subscribers this week with my answers to your questions, including this one. Have you ever blanked out during a live set and forgotten how to get back on track? How do you deal with that? It happens. I wouldn't call it blanking out, but sometimes you'll miss a piece of the bit or the story. That's happened before, where an integral piece of the story, a sentence, it just got away from me. And then usually what I try to do is backload it. And, you know, so the joke makes sense if I am acting on my feet. Or in a few instances, I've said, oh, that, why didn't that work? I forgot to tell you this part. And I'll do that. I'm comfortable enough to where I, in a live show where I can do that. I don't believe it's happened to me on television, but it does happen. And usually the immediate on your feet thing to do is really just backload it. See if you can get it in there before you get to the ending, so you're not missing that piece. You can hear all the Ask Mark Anything episodes and get new bonus episodes twice a week by signing up for the full Marin. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. All right, here's some guitar from back in the day. Monkey, La Fonda, Cat Angels Everywhere, and Buddy Holly.